Next case, which is Cantu versus Bridgestone. Ms. Hamilton.
May it please the court, my name is Rebecca Hamilton and I represent the plaintiffs and appellees.
Could you speak a little louder, Ms. Hamilton?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. My name is Rebecca Hamilton and I represent the plaintiffs and appellees in this matter. The parties bring to the court's attention two issues, both permutations of jurisdiction. The first issue is a jurisdictional question as to whether this court has jurisdiction to hear the appeal. The second issue goes to forum nonconvenience.
What I don't understand is, since we know the Mexican court has jurisdiction but might not want to exercise it, why not send it to the Mexican court, since everyone is involved is Mexican, and if they don't want to take the case, then it'll come back.
That's a correct statement, Your Honor. I would, and I don't mean to quibble at all, but I'm not sure the Mexican court, any Mexican court has jurisdiction.
Why would not a Mexican court have jurisdiction? Action in Mexico involving Mexican citizens.
That's correct, Your Honor. It's my understanding that of the 31 states in Mexico, all of them require that the defendants, at least one of the defendants, be domiciled in that state. And in this particular case, it's my understanding that Ford and Firestone are not domiciled in any Mexican state, and therefore a Mexican court would decline that it does not have jurisdiction. And it is also my understanding that that has already happened in a large number of cases, I'm going to say between 13 and 30 cases. I don't know the exact number. Now, Firestone would
take. So you're saying a foreign company can't be sued in a Mexican court?
My understanding is a foreign company that is not domiciled.
Well, I don't understand. If it's a foreign company, it's domiciled in a foreign country.
Right.
So that means you can't sue any foreign company in Mexico, in a Mexican court, is what you're saying, which is hard to believe.
And that is what I'm saying. Unless my understanding of domicile is incorrect, I would think that that company has to have some contact with Mexico.
Well, wait a second. Well, there's a lot of difference between domicile. I mean, usually you have just one domicile. I mean, it's more complicated. You know, federal law, corporation has two domiciles, where it's incorporated and it's where its principal place of business is. But if you're just saying that a foreign corporation has to have contacts to be suable in Mexico, well, that should be the same as American law. You have to have contacts with the forum or you can't be sued. So what's the problem? Bridgestone, Firestone, so on, they are active in Mexico, aren't they? Have factories and so on?
They do have affiliates that have factories in Mexico, and I do want to clarify, in a sense, what I'm saying. And I don't mean to hedge by saying it's my understanding, but I am not practitioner of Mexican law, and I don't know the answer. But it's my experience that words that we use like domicile, first of all, that's not the word in Spanish. It's a different word in Spanish, and they may have a different significance attached to it. So I've been sitting here spouting off domicile. I may not, in fact, be using the word correctly. Now, regarding Firestone and Ford, they do have affiliates in Mexico. Excuse me. I don't know if those affiliates, I don't know what their relation to the Firestone entity is.
Am I correct that the district court here has held in a subsequent related MDL matter that for this reason, Mexico is not an available alternate forum? Is that right?
I believe, yes, that's correct. What happened was the court in 2004 held Mexico was an available forum, and I guess hold might be too strong a term. It took the position the parties had conceded effectively that Mexico was an available forum. In 2007, it addressed that issue head on.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I believe, and I'm paraphrasing, but I believe that Judge Baker took the position that as a practical matter, Mexico is not an available forum because the Mexican courts were declining to exercise jurisdiction over these cases.
So you have, in effect, inconsistent rulings from your perspective in the district court handling these MDL cases. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Well, I don't see the inconsistency, though, because I thought you were starting to argue, I thought, that you didn't think that Mexican courts had jurisdiction. Now, that's very different from saying, yes, they have jurisdiction, but they might not exercise. They might decline to exercise. Those are two completely different positions, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And
well, which is your position? Are they both? But I don't understand your first. Look, I mean, you have the burden of, you know, some kind of burden here to show that Mexico is unavailable, and it, so far as whether a Mexican court has jurisdiction, whether or not it would exercise it, surely you'd have to prove that Mexico doesn't have jurisdiction. I don't understand how you can just say it's a matter of doubt.
I'd like to break down my response in two parts because it was my understanding you started with one question and moved to a second one. On the issue of declined jurisdiction, I misspoke. And I am sorry to have spoken loosely. What I should say is the Mexican courts are concluding they do not have jurisdiction.
Okay, that's not what Judge Barker said in her 2007 opinion.
I know, and I'm...
Okay, your position is they don't have jurisdiction. Fine.
Yes.
But you have to prove that. You have to find someone who will say, you know, it's a matter of law in Mexico. Mexican courts don't have jurisdiction because Bridgestone and Firestone don't have the kind of contacts that are required, right? That's your position?
No, my position, Your Honor, our position, my client's position, would be that was not our burden, that it's the defendant's burden to establish that Mexico is an available forum. It's not our burden to establish that it is not. They filed a motion for forum nonconvenience, and one of the things they need to show is that Mexico is an available
forum. Oh, okay. All right. I accept
that. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I agree.
Now, to pursue that line of thought a little and kind of winging it here because I just thought of this morning, I'm not sure what the standard of review is on that. I'm thinking it's a mixed question of fact and law.
No, it's a pure question of law. Now, what complicates it is that issues of foreign law are treated as facts in the sense that you can have a witness who testifies to what foreign law is. You can't have a witness to testify what American law is. So is your argument they don't have a witness who has adequately shown that Mexican court would have a jurisdiction of this case? Is that your position?
That's my position, and that is the position that the court took. The court listened to the testimony.
No. That second opinion by Judge Barker is not about the law. It's about the practice of these Mexican courts.
That's a fair characterization, Your Honor. I read the opinion slightly differently, but it may come to the same bottom line, which is that she considered the testimony of Firestone's expert and weighed it against the reality of what she perceived as occurring there and decided on balance the evidence or the law did not support the conclusion that Mexico was an available forum. The other issue I was going to address briefly was whether this court has jurisdiction. There was a question as to the order that we appealed from. We appealed from the December 2004 order, which did not fully dispose of all parties. And our position.
So why has it taken 4 years for that order to come before us?
The 2004 order?
Yeah.
I was retained in this case, I think, in 2007, Your Honor, and it's my understanding that what happened was the Mañez case, which I don't know if companion case is the right terminology, but what was occurring in the Mañez case caused the briefing in this case to be stayed. And so there was a stay of briefing for approximately 2 years, and it was during that time period that I was retained.
Right. So the appeal was actually filed in 2005, and it's just been sitting in
our... That is correct, Your Honor. Want
to save the rest of your time?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Hamilton. Mr. Knight?
Good morning, Your Honors. Charles Knight on behalf of Bridgestone Firestone. Briefly, Judge Barker came up with two seemingly inconsistent orders in this case. First, in the Menez case, or at least that was the first caption case that she decided, following the Gonzalez case, she said that the defendants had consented to the jurisdiction of Mexican courts. I don't hear have any evidence to the contrary, so I will assume that the Mexican courts have jurisdiction. In the second case, the so-called Mendoza case, she concluded that on the basis of certain what we contend are non-precedential Mexican decisions, that it was the practice of Mexican courts not to accept jurisdiction in these sorts of cases. We think she got it right the first time. And the reason why...
Well, but Ms. Hamilton says that that no witness has testified, or nor has it otherwise been shown, that the Mexican court would actually have jurisdiction over this case.
And that's not correct, Your Honor. The affidavit of Señor Janis... Appendix tab J to the Appellee's appendix was in the record in this case. Actually, it was in the case when
So what did he say?
And he said basically that the Mexican courts would exercise head jurisdiction and competence, I believe is the Mexican phrase.
And what? Because of Bridgestone, Firestone's activities in that state of Mexico, or what?
Because the plaintiffs were Mexican residents, because the accident occurred in Mexico, and he cited certain provisions of the Mexican, I believe the Mexican Commercial Code, if I'm not mistaken, as authority for the fact that the Mexican courts could exercise jurisdiction either by the consent of the parties, either explicitly, they basically enter into an agreement that will submit this controversy to a Mexican court, or implicitly by filing a complaint, not saying that it's the wrong, incorrect jurisdiction, and then having the defendant answer.
Okay, so you're saying this isn't a matter of contacts or domicile or anything like that, but of explicit or implicit consent by the defendants.
Yes, essentially that's the position. The way the Mexican courts apparently regard this issue, we call it jurisdiction, they call it territorial competence. It's a concept similar to personal jurisdiction, and it can be waived by the parties, same way our experts state that it can be waived by simply filing a complaint, filing an answer, and not filing a motion under 12B to have the case dismissed for want of personal jurisdiction. Our expert, and Professor Castilla, tab D to our appendix, goes chapter and verse through many different jurisdictions showing how this can be done.
He had a credibility problem with the district court, am I right?
I don't think it was a credibility problem so much as she thought that his analysis was academic as opposed to practical.
And therefore, the Mexican court was not, quote, available, unquote, for.
I think that was her ultimate conclusion. And I think she was incorrect for three reasons. First of all, she applied essentially a common law approach to this whole issue by looking at these, she said, 18 cases out of 11 jurisdictions. I'm not sure we could ever find those particular counts, agree on what particular counts she was talking, cases she was talking about, because we never, she never explained what particular cases she was looking at. But under the Mexican civil code, civil law approach, the first thing you look to is the code. The second thing you look to is the legal authorities that opine upon the code and the principles of Mexican law. The third thing you look to is something called jurisprudencia, which is a very, it's like stare decisis, but it only applies to the decisions repeated numerous times by the Mexican Supreme Court. None of these decisions fall in this category. So our position has been that these cases that she relied upon were basically manufactured in much the same way as the case in the first Menez case was manufactured when it was submitted to this court on appeal. They went down to Mexico. They hired Mexican attorneys. They filed a complaint that was really deficient on its face for purposes of Mexican law. Then they went in, had an ex parte communication, which is permissible in Mexico, with the Mexican judge saying, Your Honor, we'd really like this case dismissed. Would you issue a decision to that effect? And basically, they refused to provide. They filed essentially a Rule 41A motion saying, we want to dismiss this case as soon as we filed it. And we believe that those sorts of decisions, just like the decision of the Morelos Code court in the Menez case, isn't entitled to recognition and certainly should not outweigh the abundant evidence and legal authority showing that, in fact, the Mexican courts do have jurisdiction in this sort of case and would exercise it if the plaintiffs made a good-faith attempt to invoke the jurisdiction of the Mexico courts. And that is what did not happen in the Menez case, and it did not happen in those other cases upon which Judge Barker referred to in her decision in Mendoza. One additional point on Mendoza. It applied only in those seven cases that are specifically mentioned in its caption. It did not apply to the case before Your Honors this morning. It did not purport to apply to this appeal, and it was on appeal at that time. And quite frankly, it couldn't have. It didn't, for example, say that this decision applies to all Mexican accident cases filed in MDL 1373.
Judge Barker taking a contrary position in any cases subsequent to those in her 2007 order?
She has three cases before her that involve Mexican accident cases where the defendants have moved for dismissal on the grounds of form nonconvenience, and she has not ruled on them. Now, in the Mendoza case, at the same time she entered her entry, the July 2007 entry, she also filed a suggestion of remand, which went back to the judicial panel on multi-district litigation. And although we filed a motion to reconsider and a motion to certify her July 2007 order for interlocutory appeal but pursuant to 1292B, basically she didn't rule on those motions. Ultimately, the judicial panel did remand them back to their home courts in Texas. So those seven cases in Mendoza now reside in the federal district courts in Texas. Most of them, I believe, the Southern District. There might be one from the Eastern District as well. But there was no way those cases could come to this court now. And we're not asking that this court change the result in those seven cases in the Mendoza case. We haven't, we couldn't, and there's no reason for a cross appeal here by us because we're not asking this court to do anything other than affirm the original order of Judge Barker in this case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nye. Ms. Hamilton, what time is she? 1 minute?
Just briefly, Judge Posner asked counsel if there was any evidence to support the availability issue, and he cited the Genis affidavit. That affidavit was not before Judge Barker. That affidavit was attached to a motion filed by General Motors, and General Motors was dismissed from this case before it ever came to Indianapolis. It may physically have been in the record that was transferred from Texas up here, but it most certainly was not before the court because General Motors was not even a party to this proceeding. The only evidence that was before Judge Barker was the Castilla evidence, and counsel's correct. Mr. Castilla's credibility was not called into issue. It was more weighing his academic opinions versus the practical, real-world practice in Mexico.
Yes, but look, you can't have it both ways. I understood your argument to be that as a matter of law, the Mexican court in this state would not have jurisdiction over this suit. Judge Barker had a different position, which is that, yes, they have jurisdiction, but it's discretionary and they don't like to exercise it. And my reaction to that is, well, you know, the best evidence of that would be file the suit there, you know, make a good faith effort, and if they don't take it, you can come back to this court. Isn't it clear that, I mean, it's pretty obvious that you have, following what Judge Evans said, if you have Mexicans suing because of an accident in Mexico in a Mexican court, and the defendant, although a foreign corporation, consents, say, fine, we'll litigate it here, no objection, why wouldn't the court exercise jurisdiction?
Why wouldn't the Mexican court exercise jurisdiction? I can't answer that. Counsel did refer again to the numerous cases that were before Judge Barker. Counsel indicated that these cases from Mexico he couldn't find, or that it would not be easily findable. They are in the record.
But he's right about this concept of jurisprudence constante, right? That civil law countries only give stare decisis effect to, you know, unbroken precedent of their highest court over a long period of time. It's not like the Anglo-American system. That's correct.
As a general proposition, I think that
is. What do you mean as a general proposition? That's a basic civil law principle. That's the difference, you know, between civil law stare decisis and Anglo-American stare decisis.
That's correct, Your Honor. The reason I...
So it's one thing for Judge Barker to say that, well, these courts seem to like to decline to exercise jurisdiction. That's different from saying they don't have the jurisdiction.
Yes, it is, Your Honor. I would like to state, though, when counsel said that it's likely that these cases were produced through the same sort of shenanigans as Mañez, where judges were told with a wink and a nod, we don't want you to accept jurisdiction. Not only do I not know that to be true, there's no evidence of that. And my belief would be that that certainly did not occur, because after the events in Mañez, I think most of the attorneys involved in the case were very scared and scrupulous in how they conducted themselves in the Mexican courts. And so that would cause me to believe that when so many Mexican courts from so many states are declining to exercise jurisdiction or holding they don't have jurisdiction, either way, the bottom line is the cases are coming back.
But either way, I'm bothered by that. You keep equivocating between two very separate, very distinct principles. Of course, obviously, we can't transfer a case in effect or invoke forum non convenience to make a company sue in a court that doesn't have jurisdiction. But if it's a court that has jurisdiction but might decline to exercise it, that's very different because you can send it there. That's the best evidence of whether they're willing to exercise jurisdiction is whether they exercise jurisdiction.
Would Your Honor like a response?
Yeah.
I understand and appreciate the court's frustration not getting more precision from me. I wish I could offer it to you. I honestly do not know whether it is declining to exercise jurisdiction or whether it is no jurisdiction. And that certainly is a distinction with a difference. that affects how the courts here handle it. But from my perspective as a litigant, my belief is, were we to go through the procedure of affirming the trial court's decision, we go to Mexico, my belief is, based on everything I've seen, we'll come right back. We'll be right back again before Judge Barker.
But what is the harm in trying? In other words, most courts faced with these situations will give a conditional dismissal. You dismiss the case conditionally, conditioned on the other jurisdiction accepting jurisdiction. Why couldn't we remand this case to Judge Barker and simply say, you know, you should have sent this case to Mexico on a conditional dismissal rather than an absolute one? If they accept jurisdiction, fine. If they don't accept jurisdiction, it's your problem. You've got it back.
I believe, Your Honor, this court certainly has the power to enter that ruling. I would simply say the equities of justice and judicial efficiency are such that we already know what Judge Barker's ruling in 2007 was, and I'm not suggesting this court is bound by that decision. What I am suggesting is it has weight and gravity and significance to the court. And given that Judge Barker has looked at all these cases and seen them all coming back, as a practical matter, these cases have been pending for a long time, and I'm certainly not pointing the finger at anyone. Everything involved in this process has caused us to come to that point. That said, if we can do something today to expedite the process rather than make it drag on longer, I would argue in favor of that approach, and my belief is it would be faster just to go back to Judge Barker. I don't know if that answers the court's question.
Thank you, Ms. Hamilton.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Knight, of course. Next case for